On behalf of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we welcome you to the Sunday Feast program. So today we are going to discuss something about the Bhagavad Gita. So the Bhagavad Gita, for those who are familiar with it, and most of the devotees who are present here are familiar, the Bhagavad Gita opens with Arjun on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And he is confronted with a war, an imminent war between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. And Arjun, suddenly he feels that he made a mistake by being present there for a war. So many people are going to be killed now. So many women are going to become widows. There is going to be so much chaos. He might end up killing many of his elders, many of his own relatives, and he might end up killing many of his teachers also, people who taught him how to fight. So Arjun suddenly feels that he made a mistake. Now the way Arjuna is thinking, that can be justified in the sense that there is nothing wrong if sometimes we see ourselves and we feel that maybe I'm doing a mistake in life, right? Sometimes if we have that thought while doing something, that maybe am I doing a mistake or am I doing it the right way? So to think in that line, it's nice in the sense that it's a sign of humility, that you feel that maybe I'm doing something wrong. And if we understand that we are doing something wrong, that we are making a mistake, then to feel guilty about it, that is also nice. Because if we don't feel guilty about the wrong that we are doing, then where is the question of rectification? We will endlessly go on doing wrong. So that feeling of guilt, that why am I doing a mistake? Let me rectify myself. That feeling of guilt is very good. With that feeling of guilt, we can make a positive change in our life and go ahead. So from that perspective, the feelings that Arjuna is going through, there is nothing wrong with it. To doubt whether I am really doing the right thing or perhaps I am doing a mistake, and then to feel guilty about it. Oh, I am making a mistake. There is nothing really wrong about it. So if you read the purports of Srila Prabhupada in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita as it is, where Arjuna's situation on the battlefield of Kurukshetra is described, you see that in many of the purports, Prabhupada actually glorifies Arjuna for his soft-heartedness, for his thoughtfulness, for his consideration of what is right, what is wrong, and his feeling of guilt for being in a position where he might end up killing his own relatives and killing his elders. So it's nice. So, but even though superficially it looks as if what Arjuna is doing is very good in one sense, Krishna, who was the chariot driver of Arjuna, who was near Arjuna, he could detect that there was some deep-rooted mistake here. There was a flaw in Arjuna's heart. Krishna is Rishikesh. He is the master of our senses and is the master of the mind as well. So he can understand the nuances of our mental states very accurately. So whenever we come in front of Krishna to pray in front of him, many times Krishna knows more than what we know about our mental state. So Krishna knew more about what Arjuna was going through within his mind than Arjuna himself knew about his own mental state. So our mind, it's quite a complex phenomena. When we do a mistake in life, we can either feel guilty or we can feel shame. Now, if there is a Hindi translation going on downstairs, then the translator will have a tough time here finding out the right words. It's a bit technical because guilt and shame, they seem to be almost the same emotion. And in most cases, they are used synonymously. We do something wrong and feel guilty about it, or we feel shameful about it. It almost means the same. But if we go deeper into what these mental states are, it can give us a lot of additional insights. And we understand that these two are distinct mental states and they give rise to opposite results. I'll give an example to clarify the distinction between the feeling of guilt and the feeling of shame. As I was clearing my 12th standard examinations, I gave my 12th exams and simultaneously gave the joint entrance examination, and that is the examination to get into IITs in India. So when I gave that examination, I failed. So when I failed, what was I thinking? My thought was, oh, I made a mistake. I didn't study properly. I will never perform this mistake again. Now I will study properly and do very well the next time. So I dropped 1 year to prepare for joint entrance examination, to again to get into IIT the next year. So for 1 year, after 1 year, again I reappeared for JEE or joint entrance examination. What happened? Again I failed. But this time when I failed, what was I thinking? The same thing perhaps what all of you are thinking. I was thinking I was useless. Now I wasn't thinking that I did a mistake. I was thinking I am a mistake. I am useless. I am a mistake. I am good for nothing. I am a hopeless case. Now the feelings which I underwent the first time I failed is guilt. Where I am distancing myself from the failure. I am thinking, I did a mistake. But I am good. But I did a mistake. So when that is a mental state, there is ample opportunity to rectify. Okay, I did a mistake, now I'll rectify my mistake and go ahead. But the feeling which I underwent the second time I failed is technically called shame. Where I started feeling that I am not good enough. I am useless. Essentially, the difference is when there is guilt, there is hope. But when there is shame, it's a hopeless situation. When there is feeling of guilt, that feeling of guilt can lead to a lot of positive change in your life. Because you will take positive steps to improve. Because you are distancing yourself from the mistake. But when there is shame, when we start thinking, I am a mistake, then there can be no positive change. It leads to depression. It can lead to tremendous trauma. Briefly put, it's a traumatic situation. A situation of shame is traumatic because a person cannot see hope on the horizon. And there is nothing positive that comes out of it. Now the point is, we become victims of shame at one point of time or the other. Actually, in one sense, we all have shame within ourselves. Or we become victims of shame to a greater extent at certain points of time. A few months ago, maybe it was March of 2015, there was a video that went viral on social media. It went viral on news. Like every day I was kind of getting on my work and I saw this particular video which was there everywhere practically on the internet. And this video showed many people scaling the wall, climbing on walls. A lot of people were climbing walls. Some were holding on to ropes as if they were climbing a mountain. They were climbing a building to different floors and to different windows of a particular building. So I actually started watching it and then I explored more. What is this going on. The video was about a school in Bihar where students were taking 10th standard examinations. So inside, the students were taking 10th standard examinations, and parents and their relatives were climbing on the walls of the school and giving chits through the windows to help their children or their relative clear the examination. That was what the video was about. And there were literally hundreds of people climbing on the walls to give chits. Huffington Post, the New York Times, Washington Post, these are like some of the top online newspapers, and all of them ran featured articles on this particular phenomena that was happening. After the video went viral, after 2 days, I was happening to be traveling to Jaipur for some service. And on the train, I met a person who was a software engineer working in Bombay. And we had a very nice conversation. And during the conversation, it came to a point where I asked the dreaded question. I asked him, "Aap kahan se?" I could see the expression on his face. It was as if it shriveled, his face shriveled, and it was as if some close relative of his had just passed away. And he said, "Bihar." I quickly changed the conversation. I could understand what he was going through. It was shame written all over his face. He was experiencing tremendous shame. And back in the Brahmacharya Ashram also, I asked, you know, some devotees who happened to be from Bihar. I said, "Prabhuji, apne wo video dekha kya? Abhi Bihar se na?" He said, "Haan, main Bihar se hun. I was born there, but I did study somewhere else." Yeah, free theek hai. So, the point is, nothing wrong with Bihar, right? And nothing wrong to be called a Bihari. Generally, if you ask somebody, "Aap Bihari hai na?" Bole, "Nahi, nahi, main Chhattisgarh se." What is that? Jharkhand se hun. Bihar se nahi, Jharkhand se. It's like a big relief for them that they separated out from Bihar. Actually, Bihari is nothing wrong with that, in the sense that Krishna is extremely happy when he is called Bihari. You know, call him Raj Bihari, you know, Braj Bihari, Vamshi Bihari. And in Vrindavan, if you go, everywhere you'll hear, "Bolo Banke Bihari Lal Ki Jai." So Bihari is a wonderful thing in that sense, that even in our temple we felt that we also need some Bihari. So now we have Vrindavan Bihari and Ban Bihari at Govardhan Eco Village. The point is that shame is a phenomena that is all-pervading. Even now, you know, when people ask me, what was your department in engineering? Actually, my expression changes a bit. And a person who is sensitive can detect shame in my face when I say civil engineering. So, there are these factors within our own life which causes us shame many times. So either we are already victims of shame, or else we are trying to fight a shameful situation. Now if we analyze what causes shame, in the first example that I was talking about, my becoming ashamed or I experiencing shame when I couldn't clear the joint entrance examination for the second time. Why was I feeling shameful? Why was I ashamed? Because I was identifying myself with my intellect. That was a false identification. I was identifying so much with my intellect, and my intellect let me down. And because I was identifying so much with my intellect, and when the intellect let me down, I became hopeless. And that situation of hopelessness is shame, where you don't know what to do now, where there seems to be no way out. And many times people even end up committing suicide. That's an extreme case, but the minimum is so much of trauma, the mental trauma that you undergo because of feelings of hopelessness. And in the second case, the story of a person whom I met in the train who was experiencing shame, he was identifying so much with the place of his birth, that is Bihar, that when something wrong happened at Bihar, that is thousands of miles away, literally, that affected him because he was so closely identifying with the place of his birth. And when the place of his birth let him down, he didn't know what to do. He became a victim of shame and hopelessness. So this is how it works. First, there is false identification. We identify with something fallible of this world. And when that which is something that is fallible of this world gives way, we become affected. As long as this false identification continues, we have to be victims of shame, either today or tomorrow or a year later. For example, a person might be proud to be a leader, and a person identifies himself with that position of being a leader. But then when the followers, they misbehave, the leader becomes a victim of shame. A counselor might be very proud, I am a counselor. But when the counselees misbehave, the counselor becomes a victim of shame. So as long as we identify with something of this world, it's only a matter of time before we become victims of shame and we come to a point it seems to be hopeless. Now in Arjuna's case, what was that false identification? Prabhupada says Arjuna's false identification was, I am a good man. I am a non-violent man. Seems to be a very good identity to identify yourself as a pious person, to identify yourself as a good person, to identify yourself as non-violent. Seems to be the best identity possible in this world. But even that identity cannot protect us from the trauma of shame. And that is what comes out so nicely in the Bhagavad Gita. As long as there is false identification with anything of this world, we will be victimized. So Krishna, what does he do? The first thing he does is cuts off Arjuna's false identification by saying that you are not the body, you are the soul. Your identity is nothing material of this world. Stop identifying yourself with the different things, the different people, the different aspects of this world. Because your identity is spiritual, not material. But that identity of understanding that I am the soul, is that sufficient? If I identify myself that I am spirit soul, not the body, that is not sufficient. Why? Because this identity of being the soul has let us down, and that's how we are in the material world. The soul, our soul, has let us down in that sense, and that's how we are in a shameful situation in the material world. And that's why Krishna doesn't leave the discussion at that point. So as the chapters progress in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna elaborates further more and more about the spirit soul and what the activities of the spirit soul should be. In the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Krishna goes into great details of about how the Supreme Lord, he is maintaining all of us even within this material world. Yadadityam gatattejo jagat bhasayate akhilam yat chandramasi yat chagnau tattejo vidhimamakam. So Krishna is telling Arjuna that see the sun, the moon. Without the sun, nothing is possible in this world. All sources of energy, all sources of food, everything is dependent upon the sun. And the moon, the juice that is found within the vegetables that is coming from the moonshine. And then Krishna says, through the sun, through the moon, the Supreme Lord is sustaining the entire material world. And then Krishna explains, Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashrita Prana Pana Samayukta Pachami Annam Chaturvidham. Not simply that the Supreme Lord is providing for all energy, for all food, but even after the living entities eat the food, the Supreme Lord manifests Himself as a fire of digestion. Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva Pranayam Deham Ashrita. And it is the Supreme Lord who is the fire of digestion, who causes the fire of digestion within the stomach, that helps the living entity digest the foodstuff. The Supreme Lord is maintaining us in every way. And then Krishna explains that sarvasva chaham radisannivishto matta smritir jnanam apohanam cha. All remembrance, all forgetfulness, it's coming from me alone. If we don't have remembrance, if we don't have memory, what we can do in this world? Practically nothing. So Krishna very systematically in the Bhagavad Gita and especially in the 15th chapter, he explains how we are completely dependent upon the Supreme Lord, and the Supreme Lord is maintaining us in every possible way. The point is, even though our own soul has let us down and we are in this material world, the Supreme Lord never abandons us. Slowly but surely, Krishna brings us to the conclusion in the Bhagavad Gita that an infallible source of identity, the only infallible source of identity that can save us from all trouble, is the identity that I am part and parcel of God and I am a servant of God. With that identity, there is no question of hopelessness, there is no question of disappointment, because the Supreme Lord never abandons His devotees under any circumstances. Krishna always protects His devotees. So in that identity, protection is a part of it, and we can be saved from all trouble. Now Krishna explains different paths of yoga in the Bhagavad Gita. He explains karma yoga. He explains jnana yoga. He explains dhyana yoga. And he also explains bhakti yoga. Now in all these other processes that Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, this identity of the spirit souls, this concept of this aspect of this of our identifying ourselves as Krishna's servants is on the periphery, right? For example, in karma yoga, dhyana yoga, jnana yoga, more importance is given to our own endeavor. But on the path of bhakti yoga, central to bhakti yoga is our identity as being part and parcel of Krishna, our identity as servants of Krishna. And because on the path of bhakti yoga, this aspect of servitude to Krishna is a central focus of attention, protection is guaranteed. We are never put into a shameful situation. Why? Because we are holding on to an identity which is infallible. If you read the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna puts forth doubt when Krishna is explaining the process of Jnana Yoga. Krishna explains in great detail how the process of Jnana Yoga works. We should go to a secluded place and basically explains Ashtanga Yoga, the eightfold process, Yama, Niyama, Pranayama, Pratyahara. And as Arjuna is hearing all of that, he feels, what if I fail? He expresses doubt about success on that path and he puts forward a doubt. And Arjuna's questions can be found in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Now regarding Jnana Yoga also, Arjuna puts forth his doubt. You know, when he asks, Evam satata yuktaye bhaktastvam paryupasate, ye chapi aksharam avyaktam tesham ke yoga vittamaha. He asks that, this path of Jnana Yoga seems to be a very difficult path. Which is better? Bhakti Yoga or Jnana Yoga? Now, Prabhupada, the purpose, he says that, you know, Arjuna was hoping that Krishna will say, okay, it is Bhakti Yoga. Now, even concerning Karma Yoga also, Arjuna puts forward his doubt when he says that, Atakena Paryuktoan Vyam Papam Charati Purusha Anichannapi Varshnaya Baladeva Niyojita. Where he says that, because Karma Yoga is mostly based upon engaging our senses, we rely more upon our senses for attaining perfection in Karma Yoga. So he asks the question that many times we fail in our endeavors. How to go, exactly go about it. But he doesn't ask any questions about the path of Bhakti Yoga. He expresses doubts concerning the path of Karma Yoga. He expresses doubts concerning the path of Jnana Yoga. He expresses doubts concerning the path of Dhyana Yoga. But then he never expresses any doubt concerning the path of Bhakti Yoga. Because Bhakti Yoga intrinsically, all protection is guaranteed. Everything is within the package. For example, you know, many times we buy something. One of my friends, he bought a MacBook Pro. So MacBook Pro, it's quite an expensive item. It costs around 1.5-2 lakh rupees. Seemingly a simple laptop. But then after he buys it, then you need a charger because a laptop won't run forever. So you need a charger. For charger, again it is some 5,000-6,000 rupees. And then you need some connectors. Again for connector, another 3,000-4,000 rupees. So the accessories are not part of the package. So all other processes of yoga are like that. Accessories are not part of the package. So you end up, it's a troublesome path and the result is not guaranteed. But Bhakti Yoga is a process which is all inclusive and protection is guaranteed as part of the entire package, because central to Bhakti Yoga is the understanding that my identity is that I am part and parcel of Krishna and I am a servant of Krishna. And that sense of identity alone gives complete protection to a devotee. To the extent that Krishna, while he is describing the path of devotional service in the 9th chapter, he says that Kshipram bhavati dharmatma shashvat chanti nigachati kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. In essence, he says that a person who is on the path of bhakti yoga, even though he might be doing some mistakes, as he is doing the mistake, he is simultaneously rectifying himself, because I am providing that devotee all protection. So Arjuna, he carefully hears the process of karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga and bhakti yoga from Lord Shri Krishna. And as I mentioned before, he expresses his doubts that naturally came up in his mind when he was hearing about karma yoga, dhyana yoga and jnana yoga, but he had no doubts about bhakti yoga. And sure enough, if you see, the last verse that Arjuna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Nashto moho smritir labdhva tvat prasadad mayachita stitosmi gata sandeha karishye vachanam tava. Nashto moho, all my illusion has gone away. Smritir labdhva, I have regained my memory of my original identity. Tvat prasadat maya chita, and it has all happened by your grace, Achyuta. Sthitosmi gata sandeha, now I am situated without any doubts. And the last thing that he says is, Karishye vachanam tava. Whatever you tell, I will do. And that is the essence of bhakti yoga. What is bhakti yoga? Whatever Krishna tells, we do. We make our desire one with the desire of Krishna. That's the essence of bhakti yoga. So Arjuna, he picked up bhakti yoga in the end. So if Arjuna is the first student of the Bhagavad Gita, and if he chooses bhakti yoga, then sure enough we should understand that actually bhakti yoga is the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita. And when we have this great knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, we should understand how fortunate we are. Because in this material world, people are all struggling with so many identities. We latch on to one identity and that causes us so much trauma in due course of time. Then we go and latch on to another identity. And over a period of time, that also gives way. That is why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam. There is so much of misery in the material world. And in Bhagavad Gita we understand how exactly, where exactly should we attach our identity with. And once we understand the true object to hold on to, by which we can identify ourselves, then we become free from so much of misery. And that identity is that we are Jivera Swarupahoe, Krishnera Nityadas, that we are eternal servants of Krishna, we are parts and parcels of Krishna. So, these are some of the thoughts which I had. Thank you very much for your patient listening. Hare Krishna.
So we would like to explain.